Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. Yes, put your phone on silent. A new Netflix show called Hentified started as a web series. It's becoming an interesting way for underrepresented voices to make it into the big entertainment pitch rooms. Hentified is the brainchild of our next guest, Marvin Lemus, who just put his phone on silent, and Linda Yvette Chavez. In the show, when we meet the cast, there are these three very different cousins who are trying to save their grandfather's taco shop in Boyle Heights. Hentified is a portmanteau of gente, meaning the people, and gentrified, meaning changing the character of a neighborhood, which often results in the displacement of the people who gave it the character that was so attractive in the first place. While we here in NYC are very familiar with the subject, our friends in LA are experiencing it in a very different way. Hentified gets at the intricacies, the subtleties, the laugh out loud and sometimes sad moments in this Latinx Boyle Heights community. Hentified is now streaming on Netflix, and Martin Lemus and Linda Yvette Chavez are in studio. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This is huge.
It is.
We're still wrapping our heads around it.
It's very surreal.
We've been on Twitter and Instagram nonstop this weekend, like obsessively seeing everybody's reactions and realizing that we didn't mess it up. Yeah. And people are loving it, and that's like, it just makes us so happy.
How did the web series originally start?
It started, you know, I knew Aaliyah Williams. I had worked with her for a long time. She was a VP of digital at the time at Macro. And I was kind of, at that time, I was trying to find like my next project, and I was trying to figure out like, what story am I going to tell? Something that I needed to make, something that was Latino, that was very Latinx, that was bilingual. And, I was living in my first studio apartment by myself in like East Hollywood at the time, and it was very working class Latino neighborhood, and the palotero would come by every day, and it just felt like home, and it was just like the rancheras all the time. And but quickly was noticing affluent hipsters are moving in, and there's the cupcake spot and the sliders place. And I just realized that I was a part of the change coming into this neighborhood, because I was college educated in a different tax bracket. I'm a natural born citizen. And I, you know, even though it felt like home and it felt like how I grew up, I was dealing with this internal conflict, which is the conflict that I think I grew up with my entire life, being Mexican-American, being stuck between worlds and never feeling like I belonged. And so, you know, I met Linda, and we're like, let's write this series together. Let's like explore our identity. Let's explore gentrification and gentrification in Boyle Heights and like the birthplace of the Chicano rights movement. And what it means to try to explore, trying to find a place to belong, and what that means for us, and just explore this kind of this issue that's going on through all these different points of view. And so that's really where the digital series started.
And began, yeah.
Yeah, we wanted to make a really good web series. There was no intention of making a TV show. We just kind of jumped in.
We wanted to tell a story that was about our people, that was strong, that was something we'd never seen before. And I think the freedom, the digital, like, platform, mm-hmm. like allowed a lot more freedom than most people I think get, like Macro Studios, that's run by Charles King, where Aaliyah was, like, they were like, tell your stories the way you want to tell them. And that's what attracted me to the project when Marvin brought it to me. It was like, we're going to tell a story that's about our people, that's new, that's groundbreaking in its own way. And I was like, I've been trying to do that for so long, and these themes and these stories like just speak to me. And so sitting down together and developing that and creating the world and the characters, like, it was everything, and that's what we wanted to do.
Now, you know that when you make something like that and then you get into certain rooms, they'll say, well, can Natalie Portman star in it? Right? Nothing against Natalie Portman per se. But how did that not happen?
I think
Well, I was going to say, well, one, it was Macro. Macro is like, they, with Charles King and like everything that they were doing over there, was just very much, it was like, we are telling multicultural stories. They're a production company, Macro Studios. They are the company behind Mudbound and Sorry to Bother You and Fences. And so, you know,
Raising Dion,
which is another Netflix show. And they were able to put, like, they're like, this is what we're doing. We're here to make it authentic. Then through the scripts, we're able to attract them through Macro, attracted America Ferrera onto the project. And with those two powerhouses, like with their powers combined, they were able to help us move through these spaces, keeping it, the authenticity and our voices intact, and trying to make something like, especially because we were trying to really fill a void and trying to make something that we hadn't seen before, and trying to make the show that I wish that I had so desperately seen growing up, that would have helped me feel like I belonged. you know, you sometimes, you know, when you're making something that you haven't seen, it can kind of, you know, it can really go up against folks and how they're used to doing things, how the system works, or how, you know, the choices that you're used to making. And so, but they were able to like really put their weight behind it and help us keep it as authentic as possible.
I mean, like, this really came about after Trump's election as well. Mm. Like, I remember us sitting down the day that he was voted in, and we had a very intense session talking about why we created this show with our producers and laying it all out before we went to go pitch. And I think we came into kind of a renaissance of television where, like, people on the other side who are gatekeepers suddenly were being radicalized because mm-hmm. of this election. They're suddenly looking at people like us and saying, you know what, we got to do something different. We can't keep doing the same stuff we've been doing for so long. And so when we walked in so confidently speaking about our communities and the characters that we wanted to depict, we didn't get a lot of people saying, like, well, that's cute, but can we make it whiter? They were starting to say things like white privilege and white guilt, things that I had never seen white folks in those positions saying. And to hear that, to see people trying to take their roles, whether it was a producer in entertainment or whatever it may be, to make a change, to make a difference, and to stand up against this, you know, administration that had been so oppressive or was going about to become so oppressive, I think that's why it became so much easier for us to really be heard and valued, and also to take our opinion seriously mm-hmm. and to have faith. And Netflix, you know, ultimately when we ended up with Netflix, like, they really had a lot of faith in the vision that we held and that we really held strong to the whole time.
My guests are Marvin Lemus and Linda Yavette Chavez, the name we're talking about, Gentified on Netflix, their new show. I took a little, went down like a rabbit hole about gentrification in Boyle Heights, and it's a thing. It's like, that's what I was saying, there are anti-gentrification activists who are like, this is not going to happen here. Mm-hmm. It's a very activated community. Mm-hmm. What part of that did you want to capture in Gentified?
That's what brought, I mean, a big, you know, I grew up in LA. I grew up going to Boyle Heights in East LA a lot because my family immigrated there. Like Marvin mentioned, he like came to Boyle Heights and saw himself in that space as well. But a big thing about Boyle Heights and East LA is really the home, a base of the Chicano movement, like the activism movements in our communities started there. And so the people there like fight more fiercely than any other community that I've seen mm-hmm. for who they are, their identity as a community. And that's actually what attracted us to the story, because it was such a metaphor and representation of our own fight for our own identities and who we are. And, you know, they have proven, and I think you say this all the time, that like, when you do work together as a community, there is the potential to preserve, create change, but also maybe preserve a lot of what is still there and to still fight for yourselves. Because you, Marvin always says, like, it may have been by now Silver Lake, mm-hmm. if not for the people there who yeah. have organized and fought so hard to keep it what it is.
I mean, and I think it's so beautiful because then they are also building rapport and coalitions with like activists in Chicago and Pilsen, and I've seen them come to New York, and I don't know exactly what neighborhoods, but it's so inspiring. And for me, I grew up, I'm very much, Linda likes to joke that I'm the made for TV Chris, or Chris is the made for TV Marvin is what she says, because I'm the one that grew
Chris
up.
Chris is the character who he wants to go to the Cordon Bleu, he wants to be a chef,
right?
A little whitewashed.
Everybody calls him the whitewashed one, and they don't say he's Mexican enough, and that was very much my story growing up with my culture. For me, I thought my parents wanted me to chase the American dream, and for them and for me, the reaction to that was like, oh, well, then I have to assimilate as much as possible, and I have to distance myself from my culture as much as possible. And I grew up in Bakersfield, which is a desert city outside of LA, and I grew up kind of hating it, you know, because mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, like, we're in the shadow of LA, and I'm like, I don't want to be here. Like, I have to do everything possible to get out. And to see Boyle Heights and how hard they fight for their community and for who they are and to preserve themselves because they love themselves so much, like, that was something that I didn't have, and I was like, oh, that's, it was so inspiring and it was so beautiful, and I was like, well, I was like I'd love to have that for myself in my own life, in my own personal relationship to my culture, and through this storytelling that and on the platform that we were being given. I know that there's so many first gen kids out there, not just Latinos, but just mm-hmm. first gen kids in this country, that especially right now with an administration that is demonizing immigrants, can relate to that. And I think the show for us is to, as a statement, to be able to hopefully people come away from it feeling like, no, like, I belong right here. Mm-hmm. And no matter how I move through these spaces, and for myself, like, no matter what I listen to or what I wear or what I eat, like, I am Mexican American, and like, that can't be taken from me.
A story that's not ashamed of itself. It's so funny. I was telling Marvin last night, I was talking to my mom, and you know, she's an immigrant from Mexico, and she was talking about the show, and just some of the reflections that I get from them is so like overwhelming, because she was saying like, this is the first show I've seen that doesn't have shame in it. She's like, I see it and I say like, man, they have no shame being Mexican. They're like proud, and this is who we are, and these are the tacos we eat, and this is how we talk, and we go from Spanish to English. She's like, and I've never seen that before, and it makes me feel like, yes, that's right. That's who we are, and we're proud. And it made me realize how much shame we're subjected to consistently in our lives, like they have been forever, and how much shame we are always pushing up against, constantly fighting against. And to create a series where we proclaim like, absolutely not. This is who we are, whether we're low income, whatever we may be. We're very, very different. We have different opinions, but we're proud of that. And no one's going to tell us otherwise. I mean, that's what we wanted. We wanted people to see themselves and to fall in love with themselves again and their communities.
The name of the series is Gentified. It is on Netflix. My guests are Marvin Lemus and Linda Yvette Chavez. So it's the first shot is kind of sets up the tone. It's just so I'm going to describe for people. So the character of Eric, right, is on a bike and he's riding up, and he comes up on an older woman, and she looks at him a little bit frightened
because he looks like a gangster,
and he reaches in his bag and he's returning a library book.
Yeah.
How long was that shot in your mind?
There was a different intro to the episode.
Oh, for a long time.
For a long, long time, because that pilot had been in development for a few years. And about, I don't know, maybe a few weeks before we started shooting, Marvin is the type of person, when we work creatively, he'd be like, well, we need to tie in this for production reasons, and I also think it should be funnier, and it could be more complicated. And I would be like, you know what? I think you're right. I feel the same way. I've been feeling it too. And then he was like, okay, let's sit down and talk about it. And we sat down, and we kind of threw out the old version, and we were like, what are we trying to say in this first moment? Like, how do we set up the tone? How do we set up the conflict? How do we set up each character in ways that you don't think they are who
what image can we put in that is subversive, that is gonna, you know, throw your expectations, like how do we invite you in to think it's one thing and then completely turn it on you and make you laugh, you know?
And when you think of East LA, people are always, that's the depiction, the first thing you see is that. And so we like the idea of people watching and be like, oh no, this is the same thing that like, I'm trying really hard not to cuss right now, the same
thank you, appreciate
it. The same thing that I've seen a million times. And then to then turn that on its head and say like, yeah, but that's what other people see. And what we see is like, for me, Eric is like my brother, my primo. Like that's who it is for me. And those men in my life are so complicated. They may look that way, but he's a bookworm and he wants the five love languages. Like that's who my family is, and that's how I'm seeing them, because I grew up with them and we grew up with them, and we're going to see them from a place of love and complexity. So that's what we wanted to show with that scene.
Let's listen to a clip of these three cousins. It's Eric, who we just talked about, Chris, who we talked about, the whitewashed one who they say isn't Mexican enough, and Anna, their cousin, who really wants to be an artist, and she's gay, and she's got conflict with their mother, and they're having this conversation about class and authenticity in the first episode. They're sitting in the taco shop in the kitchen eating tamales, and let's listen.
Oh, slow down. What, they don't have tamales in Idaho?
Mm-mm, no. They got cows and potatoes, no real Mexican anything.
Yeah, present company included.
Are you sure that the ma's not gonna offend your classy taste bud?
My buds? Oh, they got a wide spectrum of appreciation. That's why I can do Costco dogs and gourmet tamales.
They ain't no gourmet tamales.
They're not, but they should be. That's a good idea. You could bring in some new clientele.
Sure, because white folks love dropping money on authenticity. Tamales, sarapes,
nopales, huaraches,
our hoods.
Man, can't they just love something because they think it's cool?
Honey, they may love all our but they don't love us. Even white like Pops' landlord can do a Mexican hat dance all while kicking Pop to the curb.
Okay, well, all I'm saying is that maybe if you fancy things up a bit, you could compete with the changing economy.
Okay. Mr. Wall Street, where's your two-piece suit, huh?
It's in Idaho with my potatoes.
That's from Gentified. And it's interesting, you know, I haven't finished yet, but there's a sense of that with Chris especially, that maybe he's right about some stuff. He, you know, in terms of trying to save the dad's taco shop, it's not just that he's the bad guy or that the landlord who's jacking their rent isn't necessarily a he's a business guy. He's trying to do his thing. How did you work on the balance of that?
For us, going into this, I mean, we'd certainly have our opinions where we lean one way on gentrification. But for us, what attracted us to this was, like, you know, Linda said earlier, it's that gray area. We went into it not assuming any answers, not trying to make any sort of judgments. We really wanted to explore the issue from all the points of view, because what we saw was, from the 4 years of research that we've been doing, like, while we've been developing this project, is like everybody has everybody in a way is right. Everybody's point of view makes a lot of sense. Like, nobody's coming into this trying to be evil. The hipsters that are moving into a neighborhood aren't, you know, coming in to be evildoers. It's a system that is kind of working the way it's supposed to work, and that it's been developed to work, you know. And so we wanted to just explore all these different points of view, especially because we're not trying to demonize anybody's point of view in this, and especially when it comes to our core theme of community versus self. Our, you know, community meaning your family, the neighborhood, your culture, and how, when you chase that American dream, the more you chase it, the more you end up distancing yourself from your culture and the traditional family values that, you know, our culture is really, we've been raised with.
You might end up displacing the very people that you love.
Exactly. In that chase of the American dream, like, you know, it's like these characters are trying to figure out, how do we balance chasing that dream and keeping our culture and not being a part of the problem? Is it even possible? Like, can you balance those things? What we see, especially in the first episode, and if you watch the whole season, you kind of start to track, like, Eric and Chris are on extreme opposites of this. Yeah. They're on this spectrum of community versus self. Anna's somewhere in the middle, but they are all challenging each other and having to learn something from each other through the course of that season, of like, what are the things that, you know, those things that you're prioritizing that I'm not, actually have value, and how do I come a little bit closer to where you're seeing things? How do I see your point of view a little bit more? And I think we did all that to be able to spark dialogue, because so often over the course of the last few years, when people talk about gentrification, there's a lot of people that, like, hear gentrification, they're like, oh, it's change happens. And we think that, and we'll turn a blind eye to it. And we hope that through watching the show, you can walk away and we have humanized and put a face to the way that gentrification can be violent, the way that gentrification really affects those that are most at risk, the low-income community, the undocumented community, so you can't say that anymore, so that you can't just write it off as just change.
And how do you contribute to it? How do you participate? Because I think, like, Chris starts out having those opinions, but when you follow him towards the end, he starts to wonder about whether or not that's really true. And, you know, and the opposite happens for Eric, who's like very much like community. And then by the end is like, well, maybe we do have to make changes in order to survive. And I think those questions and that flow back and forth is something that's very true to everyone, to us, to so many folks who have to process what gentrification and gentrification looks like, and whether or not you're on the right side of things. It's a big question, and we don't have the answer for that. Like Marvin said, we do have our opinions about gentrification. We know that it's not simple, that displacement is not as easy as change happens. And our hope is that folks who do have those ideas and thoughts about, well, it's just economics, start to see the real human face behind those quote-unquote economics, and start to think in ways that are different, and start to kind of be in community with folks who are being displaced, and say, okay, how do I participate in ways that are not going to create a huge impact? Or how do I not participate? I don't know what the answer is, but can we all try to figure something out? And we don't know if that's even possible either, right? Like, we have no idea, but we know that people are being affected and impacted, and that's what matters most to us, because a lot of those folks are people in our communities, in these different towns all over, not only Boyle Heights, but everywhere.
Do we know season two?
We don't know if it's happening yet. We have plenty of ideas, plenty of things that we really feel like we've just barely scratched the surface of the story, of the issues, of these characters. So we definitely would love to keep going, and hopefully we'll find out soon.
All right, fingers crossed for y'all. The name of the series is Gentrified. Marvin Lemus and Linda Yvette Chavez, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
This is All of It.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.